The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Monday, the start of another insane week. It's also President's Day. It's a holiday for government offices, the post office, banks, and so forth and so on. But we're, of course, here delivering the news and commentary to you as we always normally do. And before we go any further, I want to do a special shout-out to our new listeners up in Omaha, Nebraska on 1650 AM radio. And Omaha is a place I've actually been there many, many times, years and years and years ago. I did some work for a company that's still in business up there called InFlight Productions. And it's the Hardig brothers, and I have some very, very wonderful memories of working with them, and they were a lot of fun to hang out with. Now, as long as we're talking about Nebraska, before we get to our guest, Mark Glenn, who's waiting on the phone right now, turns out, of all the 50 states, Nebraska is the only one that isn't in trouble. We've already heard about California. They're issuing IOUs. Kansas is now suspending their income tax refunds. They're not sure they're going to be able to make their payroll here anytime soon. Nebraska is doing fine because they have a rule. And it is a rule that they are not allowed to spend more money than they actually have. Now, it's the same rule that you and I and every other American we know have to live with. And Nebraska decided, well, if it's okay for the people, it's okay for us. So their state constitution forbids borrowing, forbids deficit spending, and as a result of that, they're actually doing okay. The rest of the nation might collapse. Nebraska will be the new financial center of the country in the aftermath. Okay. Speaking of finances, I want to bring up our guest here, Mark Glenn, who's joining us on the phone from his home. And Mark, the reason I wanted to have you on the show, we all know that last September, the economy really started its downward slide, and a lot of people at the time were a little surprised by the suddenness with which it occurred, because we've known for going back years that our economy was headed in a bad direction. We know that the problem with the Federal Reserve monetary system is the instant it goes into operation, more money is always going to be owed than actually exists. And so once you started the Federal Reserve, there's no way to pay it all off and shut it down. And so it was from its inception. It was a debt trap for the American people. But even though we knew that things were getting bad, middle of September, it just seemed to just fall apart so rapidly. And now I believe you are on the trail of one possible reason why. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So, in a nutshell, what is it that you are following up on here?
Well, January 27th, C-SPAN featured as their morning guest, Representative, I got to say his name right, Ken Yorsky from Pennsylvania. He's not just some nobody. He does sit on a subcommittee having to do with banking and finance in the House. And so this is something of an area that he deals with. And he made some very frank statements in response to an irate caller who called in, a woman who basically you could hear in her voice the panic. And she was complaining about the previous bank bailout and, of course, the upcoming stimulus package that they were debating at that time. And he made some very frank statements in this that I don't think too many people were prepared to hear. And in effect, he basically painted a scenario where the United States stood at the edge of the abyss and literally was just 3 hours away from complete financial insolvency. And he outlaid a scenario that had taken place where there was a run on the banks, an electronic run on the banks, as he described it in his own words, that lasted about 2 hours. And in that two-hour period of time, $550 billion was, in effect, just vanished from the solvency of the United States. And the Federal Reserve had to step in and shut down the process, or else, according to his testimony, based upon the testimony of Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, by 2 p.m. that afternoon, the United States would have gone $5.5 trillion would have gone out the door by 2 p.m. Now, depending on who you talk to, the solvency of the United States is anywhere from $4 to $6 trillion. This is if you look at the economy of the United States and that solvency is the blood of the body. And so obviously if you sever an artery and start bleeding profusely, in a short amount of time, there will be no blood left in the body and the body will die. Well, basically what Representative Ken Yorsky was describing was the slashing of an economic artery, a financial artery, that had it been not at least compressed, we would have bled to death as a nation within just a few hours.
They basically put a tourniquet on it is what happened. They absolutely shut it off there. And it was a run on the bank by any reasonable definition of the word. And it's kind of interesting because that kind of withdrawal activity in that short a time is almost, you know, it's almost guaranteed to bring about a panic and a collapse.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's one thing for something like that to happen over a period of 2 months or even a month where people can kind of get their bearings and not necessarily panic, whatnot. But when something like that happens within the span of 2 hours and you have brokers looking at the numbers and they can see the numbers, I mean, really diving, really taking a nosedive, they have no option but to call their clients and to say, listen, we have a bad situation here. My recommendation is for you to get out of this thing as quickly as possible. So it's very easy to start a stampede and have literally everybody pull everything that they have out of the market. Now, as I said, it's the time frame on this thing that is the most suspicious. The fact, well, let's put it this way. The various quote-unquote experts that I spoke to about this, the one word that they used over and over again, the one thing common to all of these people I consulted was the word collusion, that this could not have taken place unless you had some big players working together in a concerted way to bring this thing about. At which point we have to ask the question, who would do something like this? Who stands to benefit by this? And, of course, there are other interesting parameters associated with this, such as the dates that Ken Yorsky gave in this C-SPAN interview that basically coincide with what we know to be the anniversary of America's worst terrorist attack, 9/11.
Okay, and we certainly know that for those of us who are watching the Dow Industrials, you know, that was the week we started to see those really huge drops, one right after the other, 500 one day, 400 the next day. And so, you know, I remember looking back at that and thinking, wow, something had really happened all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, I know there is some controversy out there as to whether or not this took place actually on September the 11th of 2008 or whether it was September the 18th. According to what Ken Yorsky said, he met with Bernanke and with Paulson, Secretary of the Treasury, somewhere around the 15th is what he said. And what they told him and the other members of Congress who were seated there is that the previous Thursday, between the hours of 9 and 11 a.m., that there was this tremendous drawdown on the banks to the tune of about $550 billion. Well, anybody who has a calendar of 2008 can go back and see that the previous Thursday is September the 11th, and coincidentally or not, this drawdown on the banking system that this representative described on C-SPAN happened to take place roughly within the same time frame that America suffered these terrorist attacks 7 years ago. So, as I said, I know that there is some This issue is in flux at the moment as to whether or not it actually took place on the 11th or whether it took place on the 18th, which either way, if you look at the terrorist attacks that took place 7 years ago, it was like a 1-2 punch. Of course, we had the attacks on September 11th, the attacks on the World Trade Center, and then, of course, on the Pentagon. And then exactly a week later on September the 18th, we had the anthrax mailing.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not this is related to this, you know, my personal gut feeling is, Mike, that this is not an accident. It's not an accident. Can I prove that this was done deliberately? No. No more than I can prove that.
All right, Mark, we got to take a break here. Mark, we got to take a break here. This is the What Really Happened radio show. Our webcam is running. Also, if you're a member of What Really Happened, the chat window is open if you want to send Mark a question. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we are talking with Mark Glenn. We are discussing the economic activity of last September, when we went into that really horrible period of decline in the markets and the panic began to set in. And we saw Congress just rush to pass the first bailout. And I remember that huge arm twisting that was going on in the halls of Congress. They were talking about if this bill was not passed, there was going to be panic in the streets. There was going to be troops in the streets to control the panic. There was going to be all this doom and gloom and disaster. And just everybody was trying to shove it through. And ultimately, what they shoved through there was actually unconstitutional because the House is supposed to initiate revenue bills. In this case, the House failed to pass the bill. They passed one in the Senate. They brought it back to the House. They arm twisted it through. It was TARP was actually unconstitutional. But it was this huge, huge, huge rush to push it. And they sold it to the American people as buying up these toxic assets so we could go back to borrowing more money, which to me was basically we're going to take a bunch of money from the American people and give it to the banks so the banks can loan it back to the American people at interest, which didn't really make a lot of sense to me or to anybody else because the polls were like 90-some-odd percent against this thing, and Congress still passed this lemon through, and the instant it was passed, it was transformed from buying up toxic assets to direct cash injection into these investment brokerages and these various banks. Now, this drawdown of $500+ billion was specifically aimed at the money market accounts. It wasn't in the stock market. It wasn't, anywhere else. It was in the money markets. And then what appears to have happened, if, in fact, this first set of withdrawals did take place on September 11th, it appears that people were trying to cover their losses by dumping their stocks, which is what triggered the subsequent declines on the 15th and 17th that we saw in the Dow. Does that sound about right to you, Mark?
Sorry. You were going along so well, I wasn't aware that you were about to ask a question. Actually, you know, Mike, that particular area is not my expertise at all. I followed some of it as well as I could. I certainly remember the roller coaster ride that was going on. But I'm actually going to have to defer to you on this because I honestly don't remember the specific parameters of that.
Okay, well, let me put it another way here. The thing that occurs to me, and by the way, if you're a Tom Clancy fan, and I like to read his books, even though he describes the CIA as icky sweet do-gooders, and we know they're not really like that, but he does write some very credible scenarios. And he had a book, and if I'm remembering it correctly, it was Debt of Honor, in which Japan decides they're going to go to war against the United States, and the first thing that they do to paralyze the country is they deliberately crash our economic markets. And to do so, they're literally having to throw away a huge amount of money to create the market panic that they create. Now, the reason I bring this up is because if you have this collusion, and I'm assuming because if I go down to the bank and I withdraw $3,000 from my savings account, the IRS is going to get a notification. And so I'm going to assume that whoever these colluders are known to the United States government and the financial systems. They have to know who did this, who did the withdrawals. And the thing is, when you do a sudden withdrawal like that, the danger is that all of your other investments are going to be destroyed by this. So whoever these colluders were, they were actually risking any other investments they may have had in the United States if the entire economy crashed because of the suddenness with which they withdrew their money. I mean, smart investors know if you want to get out of a position and there isn't a panic already underway, you do it a little bit at a time so that it stays below the radar and you don't spook the thundering herd because then everybody loses.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes. And you know, Mike, I assume that you're bringing this up as a segue to your next point, which is how is it possible that we don't know who these people were who pulled out $550 billion, essentially 10% of our liquidity in just a few hours. How is it possible that our government does not know who these people are? Or if they know, why aren't they telling us? I remember reading a story a few years ago about some old lady, and by that I mean like 70, 80 years old, and the IRS was driving, was running her life through the meat grinder over a one penny discrepancy. Honest to God. And it was as inept as that agency is notoriously known to be. If they could track down a one penny discrepancy and ruin this 80-year-old woman's life, how is it that they cannot find these people who essentially pulled 10 to 11% of the liquidity of the United States economy out in just 2 hours' time?
Well, obviously, you know, in my point of view, they have to know who did it. And here's a very tricky situation, because technically what these people did, these people who pulled their money out of the money market accounts, it is their money, and they are within their legal right to ask for it back whenever they want to take it back. But this idea of a deliberate synchronization in order to inflict a huge amount of damage, that seems to indicate some ill will. And again, this is where the timing is really, really crucial, because we need to look back and say, you know, was there some reason? Did something happen that would have caused a lot of unconnected people to yank their money all at the same time? Now, you said your experts are telling you this had to be collusion. Well, you know, that's basically a conspiracy right there to panic the American markets for some reason or some purpose. And again, our government does have to know who they are. It's impossible for them not to know. And yet this whole story has been downplayed. We've been getting Tylenol revival. They're bringing back the JonBenet Ramsey case on the corporate media. It's like the corporate media has been going out of its way to avoid this story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, keep in mind, Mike, as you know, saying this more to remind your listeners, this really was an accident that we came across this. I mean, I think it was just Thursday or Friday that this thing finally hit the net, or at least that's when I became aware of it, and I get a heck of a lot of emails forwarded to me, as I'm sure you do. Mm-hmm. This thing really just kind of stumbled upon us by accident. This has been 4.5, almost 5 months that this took place, and there has been this code of silence that has been imposed upon the whole thing. Nobody has talked about it. Of course, we got a short glimpse of this when Brad Sherman from California stood on the floor of the House of Representatives and said that he knew members who had been threatened that martial law was going to be imposed upon the country if this bailout, this banking bailout, did not pass. Well, he was telling the truth. You know, there was actually a politician who was telling the truth. And although most of us assumed that what he was describing was just the strong-arm tactics on the part of the government because they had people who had invested and they were losing their tails in this thing, and so they wanted the American people to bail them out. But essentially, the picture that has been fleshed out with Ken Yorsky's most recent comments is that we really were that close to the abyss. And again, you know, when you come across a body and you can see that it's laying there and there is blood gushing all over the place, you know, people don't just spontaneously have their arteries slashed.
No, they don't. Mark, we got to stop. Mark, we got to stop again. We got to stop. Take a break here. We'll be right back. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, or log into the What Really Happened chat room. Post your questions there. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're starting to get callers on the line responding to this issue. We're going to go to Andrea in Oklahoma. Aloha, Andrea. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question for our guest, Mark Glenn?
Yes. Mark, how do we get this out in the open, considering ABC, CBS, NBC, all the national stations that are owned by all the corporations – don't want to talk about this, or not, they're either have a stranglehold and they're not allowed to talk about this. The dates sound like they're kind of fishy, but I'm going to go with the first one you said. It happened on 9/11 between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. That all this happened, and nobody is talking about it. And they can, if they did it once, they can do it again.
Well, I agree with you, and it's funny you asked that question because Mike asked me the very same question last night. How do we get this out? Because it is, in my opinion at least, it is explosive information. And I guarantee you that if they could have tied this to some swarthy, bearded Islamic terrorist reading from the Quran in any way, you know that they would have done it. Of course, which begs the question, why did they not? Now, practically speaking, Mike is a better person to answer this question than I am because he runs a website that reaches out to hundreds of thousands of people on a daily basis. The only way that I can figure to do this, in addition to just telling your friends and neighbors, say, you know that this whole fire that is destroying the United States government, you know that it began with a run on the banks, on at least by the words of a representative on C-SPAN, that began on the morning of September 11th, 2008, and start to tell people that ultimately, you know, all revolutions began when the people sowed the seeds of discredit for whatever the ruling class was. And it takes a long time to do that. So practically speaking, of course, tell everybody you know. Secondly, I would go to the mainstream news sites, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and they have comment sections where you can post comments and whatnot. And you can, just like there's this army of bloggers out there that Israel has hired, to go and to search out the net and to leave comments on blogs that are favorable towards Israel. We should adopt the same tactics and go to the same mainstream news websites and leave comments and say, did you know that this happened, blah, blah, blah. Go see the archived interview of Representative Ken Yorsky speaking on CNN January the 27th, blah, blah, blah. You know, something like that is bound to raise some eyebrows. And as far as I'm concerned, practically speaking, that's the only way we can do this. I tried calling Ken Yorsky's office. As soon as I told them that I would like a little bit of information about this, his comments, I was hung up on. So I wouldn't count on any help from our elected representative.
Okay. And now the thing is, if we would have bled dry, let's just go with, you know, the worst scenario, where would we be now? And would they still try to cover this up? And how if people are in the streets just absolutely throwing a tantrum, I'm going to call my representatives tomorrow. I don't know that I'll get anything out of them. Who's in the know? And who, if they're going to act like they don't know about this, I want our government to stand up and do what it's supposed to do is protect America. They took oaths. And they should do everything within their power. If they're hiding all this and they're allowing us to fall on our swords, whenever they're supposed to be the ones to protect us, they're the ones that took the oath. I'm going to tell everybody, but
I'm going to insert into here for just a second. Andrea, I want to respond to that, and I want to respond to Mark here. It is, you know, I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here. It is not entirely clear exactly what did happen, okay, but I think the part that we can all agree on, and the part that we should be concerned about is that whatever happened that resulted in all of these losses, the government's solution was to take money from the taxpayers to fix the problem with the banking system. And I'm not sure that's an appropriate use of their authority. Because for whatever reason this $500 billion sell-off occurred, it certainly wasn't the fault of the ordinary working-class American. And therefore, I think we should have to say that the ordinary working-class American should not get stuck with the bill for this. Now, out here in the real world, away from Wall Street and away from Washington, D.C., if you're running a business and you make bad business choices, you go out of business. And banking is a business. And unfortunately, a large part of what we're facing right now is that banks and lending institutions made some very reckless choices and decisions. They were just so drunk on all the money that they thought they could make there, and they've made some very foolish choices. And it may be, and I've got a reader email here I need to get into here real quick, it may be that there wasn't anything behind this $500 billion drawdown than a genuine panic among the investors in the money market accounts, and that they just took the money and they moved it someplace else. They felt it would be safer. But the bottom line is the effects of this withdrawal, these losses, this edging the U.S. economy to the brink, they basically stuck that problem onto us. And all these bailouts from that moment to this, totaling something like $8 trillion now, it is an article of faith among our government and our financial institutions that somehow the American people are going to be forced to pay for all of this. And wow. I think that's the part that we need to focus on. We're getting the screws put to us. Mark, you got a comment?
Yeah, I just want to address one thing that Andrea mentioned, which is the fact that our elected members are not doing the bidding of the American people. They're not looking out for the well-being of the American people. Well, Andrea, now I don't want to say anything too alarming here, and I certainly don't want to have Mike get unnecessarily tagged as being an associator with loony people. But the fact of the matter is that
I'm already way past that point.
Well, I have to give that caveat so that you will at least maintain some favorable opinion of me.
Okay.
Nevertheless, we've got to be realistic here. Our government is not afraid of us. They are more afraid of a small cabal of people who literally can bring the country to its knees, as we have just seen with this latest development, in the span of just a few hours. I mean, keep in mind, 41 years ago, when the country was much less corrupt than it is today, when our government was much more concerned with the well-being of the people, 41 years ago, one of our ships was attacked by a foreign nation deliberately for almost 2 hours, killed 34 American sailors, and our government stood by, allowed it to happen, recalled the rescue planes that had been sent, and then has covered it up, not only covered this up for 41 years, but has rewarded the nation that did this with $6 billion a year in foreign aid. And, of course, that country that I'm talking about here is Israel. Now, my personal opinion is, I can't prove it. Again, I cannot prove it. This is just what my gut tells me. I think that every important member of Congress, and by that I'm talking about Speaker of the House and a few other people, in addition to every president in the last 40 years, that upon taking office, they have been explained, they said, listen, not only do we have embarrassing pictures of you and embarrassing information that at the very least would result in you having to hang your head in shame as you are run out of office, there are also nuclear weapons placed in every major American city in this country. And if you don't give us what we demand, your cities are going to go down one by one. So with this in mind, do we actually stand any kind of reasonable chance of appealing to our government and saying, listen, don't give these banks this money, don't do this, don't do that, when they're more worried about some nuke sitting somewhere in an American city?
Okay, and Mark, on that, we have to take another break here. And Andrea, thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to let you go here right now. We're coming up on the last segment of today's show. We'll be back with Mark Glenn and the financial shenanigans of last September after these words from our sponsors. America, welcome back to our show today. That music-only bumper always catches me off guard. We have obviously touched on a nerve, a tremendous amount of controversy. I am getting a flood of emails. I'm getting a lot of comments on the chat page at the whatreallyhappened.com website. Where to begin here? First of all, we got an email reminding us on the subject of whether there are clandestine nuclear weapons planted inside the United States by Israel, a reminder that there has been an unexplained amount of radioactivity around the New York Israeli consulate, which remains unexplained. Whether there's a weapon there, we don't know. Whether the consulate was used and the diplomatic bag was used to smuggle nuclear materials out of the U.S. back to Israel is definitely a possibility. It is surmised that Israel built its first few nuclear weapons out of fissionable materials that were provided to it covertly by the United States. So there's definitely one possibility. Going to the chat page, if this was an orchestrated attack, as Mark Glenn has surmised, and I agree is possible, then it seems it had to be our own government or a nation with whom we want no quarrel, because financial records would point to the culprit. And then another commenter, I'd say that Mark Scott was pretty much spot on. Glenn hit it. Those nukes are not for opposing army. They're for keeping we the peones quiet here. All right, we're running out of time. We've got a caller waiting on the line. So I want to read this one other email. This is an opposing point of view. And this came in over the regular email to whatreallyhappened.com. Ken Jorski was referring to an electronic run that occurred on 9/18, not 9/11. It is clear from the date McCain pulled his suspending his campaign stunt that this is the truth. I've asked a number of finance wizards about this. They are unanimous about the date and the causes and where the money went. It was reinvested in guaranteed savings account and in short-term U.S. Treasury bonds. It did not simply vanish. It was a flight to safety from a vehicle, money market accounts, that have been historically considered safe harbors. Federally or state guaranteed savings account and ultimately U.S. Treasury bonds are considered the gold standard of safety. The run was caused by people finding that on 9/18, a money market fund not oriented around consumers and not related to laymen, but one that catered to institutions, mutual funds, ended up having less than a dollar in value for every dollar deposited. I remember reading about that in the financial papers. Because there was more demand for cash than they had on hand, and that basically what this person is saying, that's what spooked the run. Now, here's the point I want to make. I don't want to get into a debate over who's right and whether this was a deliberate takedown or whatnot, but here's the point that concerns me. How do we know that this is not going to happen again? And if it does happen again, what's the government going to do? Turn around and borrow more money on our backs to give to these investors? You know, it just seems to we're seeing this repeating situation of robbing the poor to give to the rich. And that has to end violently because, you know, past a certain point where we don't have it anymore, and we don't, we're already scraping the bottom of the barrel. You know, at some point, you know, we're just going to see an explosion. We're already seeing these riots all around the rest of the world. We already see our government getting ready to deal with social unrest and riots here in the streets of the United States. Why don't these people see the end result of their policies and say, we've got to do something different here? Mark?
They never do, Mike. That's the problem when people get so drunk on time. I mean, let's face it, when people are drunk on whatever, they do things they would not normally do because their senses have left them. And you would think that history would be a good teacher for these people that, you know, when you starve a man, when you take away his livelihood and threaten his family, he's going to revert to his brutal animal nature and he's going to come after you. But it has been the one constant in history that people, they get money, they get power, and they think that somehow that they have become gods and that that they are impervious to these laws of human nature. So they never do learn it, and unfortunately I think that they're going to have to find out the hard way again.
Well, you know, it reminds me of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and I think the problem with our political and economic leadership, it has been so long since they've had to live on that bottom level, that survival level, they are completely blind to it. And it's from this that you get the things like, you know, the Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake, although there's some doubt she actually said that, but it basically reveals that sense of cultural blindness. Mark, we're going to let you go here because we've got one other caller we've got to get on to, but thank you very much, and please keep us up to date as you investigate this matter further.
Take care.
All right, thanks a lot. All right, we're going to switch real quick to Renee in North Carolina. Aloha, Renee. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes, he was talking about how when he called the representative's office, he was hung up on. And you know, it's amazing to me how these gatekeepers and people who work for the government, how they treat us. It's like they have no conscience and no shame. We pay them better than what somebody in the private sector gets for a comparable job. They get much better health care and retirement benefits than we ourselves get. And yet they tell you they're going to call you back, never do. Treat you like you're something stuck to the bottom of their shoe. They lie to you. And that's why I really don't like how we always talk about the government. These are people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we're paying them, and they treat us What is the matter with them? They treat us in this such this shameless manner with such contempt. There's something really wrong with them. There's a government, but there's a government culture, and they all
yes.
catch it like a disease from each other, an attitude that they have toward us, the public.
Well, what it is they've forgotten they're supposed to be civil servants, and they think they're civil masters. And unfortunately, once they get into that idea that because they're the government that they are automatically in charge, they really do. It develops a culture of arrogance. And part of that is to kind of assuage their guilt, because they're basically being paid, according to studies, government workers are paid about one-third more than private sector workers doing exactly the same
mm-hmm.
job. So they're getting more money than we are. And so they inevitably, they're going to start seeing themselves as our social superiors. And part of that is the government's own mechanism to deflect criticism, to basically create a culture of lack of sympathy. The government does not want government workers to be sympathetic to the plight of the ordinary people, because that makes it harder to basically enforce the will of the government. And, you know, there's this funny commercial about Cupid. He's gotten into tax trouble, and he's trying to shoot his arrows into the heart of the tax auditor. And the tax auditor says, that doesn't work on me. I work for the Internal Revenue Service. And, you know, it's making fun of a situation we have all seen. The people in the government are encouraged to have this arrogance toward us, because that's part of the mechanism of enforcing control. And unfortunately, as the schism continues to open between we, the people, and the government, they're going to get more arrogant, because that's part of the defense mechanism. The more they can puff up their chests and swagger around, they figure we'll be cowed and we'll bow and, you know, we'll go away and not bother them anymore. Unfortunately, again, that only works for so long, and it does exacerbate the eventual outcome.
Yeah, because you can tell when you talk to them, they do everything they can to distance themselves from you. They don't want to get to know you. They don't want to have empathy for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they want that distance. And I found they react in two different ways. They either, like, get angry with you, or some of them I have talked to, you can tell that they are feeling kind of guilty, and they can't get you off the phone fast enough. Because, see,
yes.
many of them, too, they know that job's the best job they can get. Because I've
mm-hmm.
found many people I've known who applied for government jobs, and they scored the highest on the test. They are never the one hired. So I think, now, on an unconscious level, not a conscious level, many of these people will do exactly what they're told, you know, as in the Milgram experiment, because
yes.
on some level they know they have to, because that's the best they can ever get, and they have to protect it, because they could not do as well in the private sector.
That is absolutely true. I used to run into that all the time when I was dealing with the military, contracting setup, and it is absolutely amazing. The very best minds are kept out of there. And, you know, and the amazing thing is, Hitler did the same thing with his own general staff. He hired a bunch of losers in to be his henchmen, and they all knew that their power and their glory and their wealth was always 100% dependent on doing what Hitler told them to do without
mm-hmm.
question. And that was how Hitler built his loyalty. He took people who couldn't get jobs as postal workers, and he made them officers and officials within his government, and that's how he got his loyalty. That's how we get vice presidents who can't even spell the word potato. That's how we got W, you know?
Yep.
All right. Well, listen, Renee, we have to let you go here.
Okay.
And, boy, what a hot show this was today. Thanks to all the people who fed in great comments on the chat page. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the phone calls. It's really lighting up the show. Please take a time to call your local AM and FM radio stations. Ask them to bring us on the air there so we can reach more people with this important stuff that we all need to know. Until tomorrow, stay safe, be well, happy President's Day, and aloha, America.